Amendment 3's Fatal Flaw. Welcome to the audio edition of Act for Missouri's article, Amendment 3's Fatal Flaw. Repeal isn't where it stops. This is a biblical and constitutional analysis regarding Missouri Amendment 3. The debate is not about demanding a perfect law. It is about whether Missouri voters should repeal the abortion rights language adopted in 2024 and then take the additional step of placing new language in the Constitution that expressly permits abortion in specified circumstances. If Amendment 3 simply repealed the reproductive rights language Missouri voters adopted in 2024, this would be a very different discussion. There is a serious argument for removing as much bad constitutional language as voters presently can and continuing the fight for fuller protection afterward. But Amendment 3 does not stop with repeal. House Joint Resolution 73 repeals the current Article 1, Section 36, and replaces it with a new Section 36A. The replacement language includes this operative sentence: "An abortion may be performed or induced upon a woman in cases of medical emergency, fetal anomaly, rape, or incest. For rape or incest, the amendment allows the abortion through 12 weeks gestational age." The official ballot title likewise tells voters that Amendment 3 would allow abortions for rape and incest, under 12 weeks gestation, emergencies, and fetal anomalies. That sentence, not whether Amendment 3 is perfect, is the issue Christians should examine carefully. Start before the ballot. What do we believe? Before talking about polling, political feasibility, or how many abortions a new law might reduce, it helps to establish the moral principles first. Christians who believe Scripture speaks to the value of unborn life can walk through a simple sequence of five questions. Number one, does human life begin at conception? If the answer is yes, then from conception we are dealing with a living human being, not merely a potential future human life. Number two, when does that human being deserve protection? If every human being bears God's image and possesses value because of what he or she is, why would equal protection begin at 12 weeks, viability, or birth, rather than when that human life begins? Number three, is intentionally ending that innocent human life through abortion morally wrong? If yes, then the moral rule must be established before we calculate which political outcome appears most advantageous. Number four, does rape or incest change the child's humanity, innocence, or value before God? The crime is horrific. The child did not commit it. Deuteronomy 24:16 and Ezekiel 18:20 both reflect the principle that guilt is not transferred from parent to child. Number five, does a terminal prenatal diagnosis erase personhood? Amendment 3 narrowly defines fetal anomaly as a condition that would make life outside the womb impossible. But a shortened prognosis does not answer the prior moral question. Is this still an innocent human life bearing God's image? A genuine medical emergency involving the mother's life deserves separate treatment. There are circumstances in which physicians are trying to preserve life in a tragic situation where both lives may not be saved. That is morally different from allowing the intentional killing of a child because of the crime of the father or because the child's life is expected to be short. The question that follows. If we answer the first questions by saying that life begins at conception, that the unborn child is innocent, and that the circumstances of conception do not change the child's value, then a harder question follows. If that child deserves the protection of the state, what biblical principle gives government, or voters, the moral authority to enact a constitutional exception saying that child's abortion may be performed? That is not a demand for perfection. It is a question about the line between tolerating an evil we cannot presently eliminate and affirmatively enacting legal permission for that evil. This is not perfect or nothing. Christians can support incremental laws. A bill can reduce an evil without eliminating every instance of it. Government operates in a fallen world, and prudence matters. If Amendment 3 merely said, "The 2024 reproductive freedom provision is repealed, and abortion policy is returned to the General Assembly," the incrementalist argument would have much greater force. A voter could reasonably say, I am removing an existing constitutional barrier. I am not being asked to enact new constitutional language affirmatively permitting abortion in specified cases. But that is not where HJR 73 stops. After striking the current language, it writes a new rule into the Constitution. An abortion may be performed or induced. The distinction matters. There is a moral difference between failing to prohibit every evil and affirmatively creating a constitutional category in which an acknowledged evil is legally permitted.
The Romans 3:8 question.
Supporters of Amendment 3 make a compelling appeal. Repeal the broad abortion right, accept limited exceptions, save more children now, and continue fighting for the rest later.
Every Christian should want fewer children to die.
But Scripture requires us to examine not only the desired end, but also the means by which we pursue it. Romans 3:8 rejects the principle summarized as, "Let us do evil that good may come."
Romans 3:8 does not answer the Amendment 3 question until we first identify whether the act being asked of us is itself wrong. That is why the earlier questions matter.
If we conclude that intentionally killing an innocent child conceived in rape is contrary to God's moral law, then the next question cannot simply be, how many more children might be saved?
That question measures the morality of the decision primarily by its expected outcome. Philosophically, that resembles utilitarian reasoning, choosing the course expected to produce the greatest overall good or the least overall harm.
Christian ethics is not indifferent to consequences.
Saving lives matters enormously. Prudence matters. We should seek outcomes that protect the innocent and restrain evil.
But Christianity does not teach that a desirable result can make an otherwise wrongful act morally permissible.
Scripture requires us to examine both the end we seek and the means by which we seek it. Romans 3:8 directly rejects the reasoning, "Let us do evil that good may come." So if we have already concluded that these children are innocent human beings, that they bear God's image, and that intentionally killing them is wrong, the first question must be,
may we affirmatively authorize what we believe God's law forbids, because we expect that doing so will save a greater number of other lives? Only after answering that moral question should we begin calculating the projected consequences. Regarding these consequences, there is what is certain and what is uncertain. What is certain is that Amendment 3's text expressly says that an abortion may be performed or induced in the listed circumstances. That language would become part of Missouri's constitution if voters approve the measure. What is uncertain is how many abortions the amendment would actually prevent. The text does not contain a number, and modern abortion access includes interstate travel, telehealth, mailed medication, and exceptions whose future enforcement details are not contained in the amendment. Would Amendment 3 stop the abortion or change where it happens? Amendment 3 would substantially change what Missouri abortion providers may legally do. It may prevent some abortions. But those are different claims from saying that every child outside the listed exceptions will actually be saved.
A more precise question is, if a Missouri woman is determined to obtain an abortion, would Amendment 3 necessarily stop her? Or might it change the route she uses? Let's look at the routes. Could she obtain an elective abortion from a Missouri provider?
Amendment 3 would sharply restrict that route. Existing statutes and future implementing laws could limit what Missouri providers and facilities may do.
Could she travel to another state where abortion is legal?
Nothing in HJR 73 itself prohibits interstate travel for an abortion. The amendment governs Missouri's constitution and the authority of Missouri government. It does not control the law of another state.
Could abortion medication still arrive through the mail?
HJR 73 itself does not establish a system that stops abortion pills from being mailed into Missouri. Current FDA rules allow certified pharmacies to ship mifepristone to patients, and national WeCount data show that telehealth and Shield Law provision have become major avenues of abortion access in states with bans or severe restrictions.
Could she seek an abortion under the rape or incest exception?
Yes, through 12 weeks.
The final Amendment 3 text contains no police report requirement and no specified verification procedure for the rape or incest exception. Could an abortion occur under the fetal anomaly exception? Yes. The definition is narrow. It requires an abnormality that would make life outside the womb impossible. But the constitutional text does not itself require an independent second diagnosis, post-abortion pathology, or another specified verification procedure. The careful conclusion is this. Amendment 3 could make some abortions harder to obtain. But in an era of interstate travel, telehealth, mailed abortion drugs, and constitutional exceptions, it is more accurate to say Amendment 3 would change where and how some abortions occur rather than guarantee that they do not occur. That matters when projected lives saved are used as the moral justification for accepting the exceptions. If the predicted benefit is part of the justification, voters should ask how certain that prediction really is. The reporting requirement was there, then it was removed. This is one place where the legislative history is especially revealing. The introduced version of HJR 73 permitted abortion following rape or incest through 12 weeks only when documentation was presented showing that the rape or incest had been reported to law enforcement at least 48 hours before the abortion. The final version sent to voters removed that requirement. The final text simply permits abortion for rape or incest through 12 weeks and contains no reporting prerequisite. Why does this matter? Any reporting or verification safeguard would require future legislation. It is not part of the constitutional amendment voters are being asked to approve. During the legislative debate, Act for Missouri was told that the reporting requirement could not remain because the votes were not there to move the proposal with it. Public reporting also quoted the House handler giving a different rationale, that victims should not be pressured to report. We cannot independently prove how every legislator would have voted. But the documented fact is enough to raise the question. The safeguard was included at introduction and did not survive the legislative process. Voters are now being told that safeguards can be added later. Perhaps they can, but adding them would require a future General Assembly to pass legislation that is not before voters now. The legislature can address it later is therefore not the same as having the protection in Amendment 3 itself. Personhood changes the question. There is another way to frame the constitutional issue without pretending that one amendment can answer every difficult statutory question. Consider the personhood principle. Human life begins at conception, and every innocent human being is entitled to equal protection of the law from conception. A personhood amendment would change the debate at its foundation. Instead of beginning with which abortion should be legal, under what circumstances, and at what gestational age, the first constitutional question would become, when does human life begin? And when does that human life become entitled to equal protection of the law? That is a very different conversation from the one Missouri is having today. It is different within the pro-life movement, where much of the debate now centers on exceptions, incremental restrictions, and political feasibility. And it is different in the broader debate with abortion rights advocates, because the discussion would have to address the status and value of the unborn child before moving to the circumstances under which that life may be intentionally ended. If Missouri establishes that human life begins at conception and that equal protection attaches at that point, the Constitution supplies the governing principle. The legislature would still have substantial work to do. Medical emergencies, criminal intent, coercion, trafficking, jurisdiction, due process, enforcement, abortion drugs, physician standards, and many other difficult questions would still require ordinary legislation. That is not instant perfection. It is a constitutional starting point. It establishes who is entitled to protection before lawmakers debate how that protection should be implemented. Amendment 3 takes a different approach. It repeals the current reproductive rights provision, but then writes into the replacement language specific circumstances in which an abortion may be performed or induced. The disagreement is therefore not simply perfect law versus imperfect law. It is a disagreement over what foundational principle Missouri should place in its constitution. Conclusion. The question Amendment 3 leaves us with: the facts established by the amendment's text are straightforward. Amendment 3 would repeal Missouri's current constitutional reproductive rights provision. It would then replace that language with a new constitutional section. That replacement section expressly states that an abortion may be performed or induced in cases of medical emergency, fetal anomaly, rape, or incest. The final text contains no police report requirement or specified verification procedure for the rape or incest exception. Adding such safeguards would require future legislation. The amendment would sharply restrict what Missouri abortion providers may legally do, but it cannot tell voters with certainty how many abortions would actually be prevented rather than obtained through another route. Those facts bring the discussion back to the first principles. If human life begins at conception, if that child bears God's image, if the circumstances of conception do not change the child's innocence or value, and if intentionally ending that innocent life is wrong, then Christians must decide what follows from those beliefs when the ballot asks them to enact constitutional language permitting abortion in specified circumstances. This is not a demand that one amendment instantly solve every legal and medical question surrounding abortion, nor is it an argument that incremental progress is always wrong. It is a narrower question. Does repealing one constitutional wrong justify placing new constitutional permission for abortion in its place? Before relying on polling, projected lives saved, or political feasibility, Christians should examine the amendment's actual language, measure the proposed means against Scripture, pray for wisdom, and decide with a clear conscience before God.